Hi, this is Paul Ingram of PainScience.com. It is Thursday, January 11th, 2024. This is the first audio version of 2024, the second post of 2024. It's taken me a little while to get going on the newsletter this year because I had to spend the first week of 2024 dealing with a server move, with moving PainScience.com from one computer somewhere in Michigan, I think, to another computer somewhere in Michigan, I think. And it went pretty well, but not great. A day into it, I declared victory, and I should have known the second I declared victory, I was in trouble. And I was, because I then lost the rest of the day to more trouble with the new server. And then just yesterday, as I was working on this post and getting ready to get it going, get it out the door, the website went down again, which never happens. On the old server, I had gone literally years without an outage. And then suddenly I had an outage with this new server, which is kind of like driving a new car off the lot. And, you know, in the first week, it has a breakdown. So not great for trust in the device, but my host assures me that this was a general problem that affected many customers, many servers, and was not particular to my new server. So we're up and running, and I'm back to writing, and today I have a members only post for you about plantar fasciitis and barefoot walking. The title is Barefoot Walking for Plantar Fasciitis, Better Than I Thought. Barefoot walking is not something that I ever would have thought to prescribe for plantar fasciitis. And in fact, I would have warned readers not to do that. It's even possible I would have laughed if anyone had suggested it as an idea. But now a surprising new study, my favorite kind, suggests that I might need to change my tune. The results are of practical interest to anyone with persistent arch and or heel pain. So yeah, surprising good results, or maybe it was just that all the walking was on treadmills. The same test of barefoot walking on concrete might have been a huge mistake. So this post is for members only, and I will explore the paper and its implications for about 2,000 words, and then I'm also going to transplant this content to my book about plantar fasciitis. This is going to be a chapter as well as a newsletter/blog post, and so you can also read about it in the plantar fasciitis book if you are interested, really interested in plantar fasciitis. There's an awful lot of information there, including this now or very soon. I haven't actually done it yet, but I will scramble and do that later today. So a little bit of background before we get further into this, some background about the barefoot running fad. I have heaped skeptical scorn on barefoot running for many years as the biggest fad in running since running itself, a topic rife with bullshit and plenty of evidence that it doesn't actually prevent injury, which is the main reason that people do it. Indeed, there is good evidence that it produces no important difference in injury rates, just the types of injuries. And I'll now dig into that. This is with a multi-paragraph footnote about a very important study from a few years ago, 2016. This is Altman and Davis. And it's so good. It was such a good and needed study at the time that I will indulge this digression. So before we get back to barefoot walking, here's one of the most important pieces of science about barefoot running. I waited a long time for this study. It was, when it came out at last, the first prospective comparison of injury rates in shod versus barefoot running. All research on this topic until then had been unable by design, methodologically inadequate to answer that question. And so for years before this was published, we endured tedious arguments about injury rates based on the wrong kind of inadequate data. Prospective is what we needed the whole time. following a bunch of initially uninjured runners of both types, barefoot and not so barefoot, to see what happens to them. For this test, 200 experienced runners were studied over the course of a year. 94 of them wore shoes, 107 had no shoes, or for about a quarter of their mileage, true minimalist shoes, no arch support. The barefooters had been running that way for at least 6 months and more than 18 months on average, so they weren't in that awkward transition phase where injury rates could well be higher. They had had a chance to adapt to barefoot running. And so the results, they were clear and unsurprising. There was no important difference in injury rates. There was a difference in the types of injuries. Each was better in some ways, worse in others. Although the paper emphasizes fewer overall injuries for barefoot runners, injury rates are what matters, the number of injuries per 1,000 miles, say, and they were, quote, not statistically different between groups due to significantly less mileage in the barefoot group. There's an extremely important caveat about that. It does not flatter barefoot running. The barefoot running volume was just 24 kilometers a week, while runners in shoes ran nearly twice as much, 41 kilometers, without an increase in injury rate. Although this is all made clear in the paper, it's strange that it wasn't more strongly emphasized. As Alex Hutchinson put it for Runner's World, quote, the only way the comparison has any relevance is if they're arguing that barefoot running reduces injuries by preventing you from running as much as you'd like. Naturally, a larger and longer study might have had different results, but this was an excellent start. And ever since, we've been able to say with high confidence that barefoot running is not a panacea for running injuries. And that's a nice segue back into our topic of the day. So for a long time, I've been thinking in terms of barefoot running, not preventing injuries, and things that don't prevent injuries generally aren't good at treating them either. And so I had never even considered the possibility that more modest doses of natural running or walking might be therapeutic. Reinstein et al.'s experiment encourages me to reconsider. So what the heck is plantar fasciitis? Most of you probably know, but just here's a quick review. It's foot arch tendonitis, basically. It's an overuse injury. This is an oversimplification, but it's good enough to start. Arch support is a relief to most people with plantar fasciitis because it relieves strain on the inflamed, overworked connective tissue of the arch. Arch support is more of a band-aid than a cure for most people. But there is no doubt that it is a relief to many patients because it's taking load off the arch. For the record, I'm speaking from personal as well as professional experience, as I often do. I've had plantar fasciitis off and on for my entire adult life because I have just a subtle foot deformity that makes me more vulnerable to it. So I've had a few epic bouts of plantar fasciitis and many minor ones. So I know well how good it can feel to stick something under my arch and rest my arch on some good, cushy arch support. For some people, a little arch support and taking it easy for a while actually does the trick. That's the cure. It's all they need. Just take the edge off the loading, and a couple weeks later, you're fine again. Obviously, many cases are more tricky than that. Barefoot walking seems like the opposite of giving the arch a rest. So why would it help plantar fasciitis? And especially in less than a month, which is the duration of the study. It's really not a lot of barefoot walking. So Reinstein et al. Hypothesized that barefoot walking would reduce pain and improve function in people with plantar fasciitis. They compared the short-term effects of a four-week barefoot walking program to walking in shoes. And by the way, this is Reinstein and Weissman and Masharawi, who you've heard about before recently. You probably don't remember, but you have. They keep coming up in my bibliography, and in particular lately, these are the same folks, or some of them, behind the study of the relationship between neck pain or neck issues, the spine, and headaches. Which I wrote a bunch about in late 2023. So same folks here again in my inbox. They studied 52 people with plantar fasciitis, split evenly between two groups, one with shoes, one without. The shod group, This is a word you don't get to use very often. Use their own comfortable sports shoes, while the barefoot group had truly naked feet. No shoes, no socks. This was all on a treadmill, which is a key detail because treadmills are quite a lot springier than sidewalks. It's not the same as walking on a sidewalk or the side of the road or even a trail. Everyone walked for 10 minutes for each of two weekly sessions at first, which is super easy, of course. Even for someone with foot pain, that's pretty easy unless it's really bad. And then they ramped up to 30 minutes by the end of it, which is a fair bit for people with stubborn foot pain, but still, you know, easy by walking standards. Everyone also got a dose of therapeutic ultrasound after each walk, and this is quite interesting to me. This really jumped out at me in the paper, because ultrasound is a notoriously ineffective therapy. Popular, but useless. And it was included in this experiment, quote, to comply with ethical standards. snort. That's funny. And kind of grim. Apparently it's unethical to withhold a useless treatment from patients with sore heels. You certainly wouldn't want to deprive them of that useless treatment. That would be terribly unethical. Yeah, red tape. And the main thing that they were looking for was an effect on function, as measured by an old survey, the 36-item short-form health survey, which has been around for, I think, at least 30 years. It's a way of measuring changes in quality of life related to health issues. And they found, I guess it was, they had a validated Hebrew version of it. Validated simply meaning that, yep, it actually tells you what you want to know about people's health. They also measured heel pain and tenderness specifically. So the promising results were that function improved for everyone, but the gains were greater for the barefooters. Heel tenderness and pain tolerance also improved, but didn't budge at all for the shod group. So that's good. Here's Reinstein et al. Quoting from their conclusion. The current study demonstrates that adding a 4-week barefoot and shod walking program on a treadmill to standard care, therapeutic ultrasound, is beneficial for people with plantar fasciitis. The results also indicate that walking barefoot is associated with even greater improvements in pain levels and function than walking when wearing shoes. So great news, but can we believe it? Good news in research is often like an unjust technicality in a court of law. But in this case, the barefooter's win seems to be based on what we'd actually like to see. Results that anyone can feel, a meaningful improvement. This was not merely a statistically significant win, which means a low risk of a false positive, the p-value, a notoriously hackable and abused number. It was a good effect size, a Cohen's D score of 0.89 for pain. That's good. That's considered large. If you have been consuming my content for long, you'll know that I frequently complain about results being touted as significant when all they mean is statistically significant, but the effect size is small and often left out of the abstract. You would never leave out a good effect size. Why would you do that? If you had a good effect size, you would brag about it. You would put it up front and center. And that is exactly what we saw here. It is a good effect size. And so they put it in the abstract, as you do. But I'm still talking in, despite the fact that it sounds good, I'm still talking in terms that a lot of people are going to be scratching their head about. So let's get a little more simple. The barefooter's pain dropped 5.1 points on a 10 scale, compared to just 2.9 points for the shod. That's using numbers that follow up 1 month after the end of the walking program. So 5.1 points is a good drop, but it's the 2.2 difference from the people wearing shoes. That's what counts here. It's not huge. 2 points isn't enormous, but it's comfortably on the happy side of 2.2, not 1.8. And who doesn't want those 2 points? No one. That's who. Everyone wants those 2 points if you can get them. So everyone still had some pain and limitation, but it was getting down to pretty minor levels for the barefooters. And as I read this, I realize I didn't include in the text what did they get down to? What actual score did they get down to? Let me, I know it's right in the abstract here, so I'll just look that up. They got down to, it's hard to read abstracts. Nope. I know which table it's in, but that specific number is not in the abstract. Here it is. I've got the PDF right here. There we go. There it is. So they got down to 1.7. As I started to look that up, I thought, this is a bad idea. Don't try to look this up while you're reading. But it wasn't too bad. Didn't take me too long. So 1.7, they got down to 1.7. That's for the kind of, you know, what you would consider to be the most important number in the study. They measured a lot of things, but this is the main pain score, 0 out of 10 during the first steps in the morning, which is a Cygnus. And the barefoot group started out at 6.8 and ended up at 1.7. So pretty good. Okay, so surprising? The results are surprising for the simple reason that it seems like barefoot walking would increase load on the arch of the foot, and that's the last thing that any overuse condition needs, right? That is the surprising first impression is, well, that's weird. Why would giving the arch more work to do work out well? I suspect the explanation is that it actually did not increase load on the weakest link in this chain. This was probably just a case of load management in disguise. And I like the author's educated guess. Quoting again, this may be explained by the fact that the biomechanics of barefoot walking transfers force absorption to the front of the foot and decreases pressure on the heels. Decreases. Our four-week walking program may have allowed the heel tissues sufficient time to recover and desensitize. So there you have it. Load management in disguise, probably. Barefoot walking may have just shifted much of the burden to the healthier tissues of the forefoot. Thus, the overwhelmed tissues at the back of the foot got only a little just right stimulation, and even overused tissues still need some use and almost certainly benefit from it if the dose is right. Let's talk a little about overuse versus disuse. So-called overuse injuries, also known as repetitive strain injuries, they're not always just a matter of obviously overdoing anything. Overuse is always relative to what the tissue can handle. One person's overuse can be totally fine for another person for a host of reasons, including subtle genetic, metabolic, and pathological variables. But the most common reason that a tissue might be fragile and vulnerable to overuse is just not using it enough. Say that again. The most common reason that a tissue might be fragile and vulnerable to overuse is underuse. Right? That isn't quite the paradox that it sounds like, because connective tissues weaken with neglect. Use it or lose it. So the threshold for overuse is a moving target. Make no mistake, you can use any tissue enough, no matter how healthy it is, that it starts to fail. No matter how healthy it was in the first place, you can mess it up by overusing it. But it happens a lot more easily if it was unhealthy in the first place. If it was bad enough in the beginning, it makes sense to blame the problem more on that vulnerability than the strain. Like an out-of-shape person trying to go for a 10-kilometer run without any training. The problem there isn't overuse. It's overuse relative to being out of shape. I strongly suspect that the relative overuse of degenerated arch tissues is common with plantar fasciitis, specifically because people don't walk enough, so lots of people have cruddy, under-exercised arches. And so that might be why the results were so good here. Because barefoot walking is a nice way of exercising the arch in the Goldilocks zone. So, am I going to start recommending barefoot walking as an evidence-based treatment method? This is, on its face, this is a pretty clear-cut case of, I thought this wouldn't work, and it did. Science says it did. So, should I change my mind? Should I start recommending barefoot walking? Nope. But it's not because I'm intellectually stubborn, I promise. No study is perfect, and even a perfect study could be wrong by fluke. That barefoot group could have been polluted with several easier cases completely by chance. which wouldn't be anywhere near as rare as a 29 hand in crib, and which is, I think it's something like 1 in 300,000. My grandpa-in-law, I think, had 2 in his lifetime of playing crib, famously. Famous family story, of course. Such flukes happen in science surprisingly often, and it's one of the main reasons that good news always needs replication. So this study was good, better than most, I think, actually, which is one of the reasons I'm writing about it. More and more these days, I like to write about studies that don't suck, and they're hard to find. And so when I find them, I'm delighted and happy to write about them. So good, yeah, good study. But, of course, not perfect. It could have been larger. It would have been greatly improved by diagnostic imaging. The eye control group only receiving ultrasound therapy, that would have been nice. And I think most importantly, and not acknowledged that I noticed in the paper, more control over confounding factors. And I've got a big for instance here. So for instance, I think it's all too possible that the treadmills are a fly in this science ointment. We've got good evidence that springy structures in the lower limbs have less work to do when we're walking on a springy surface. This is a topic I discuss in detail in my plantar fasciitis book. It's very cool. We have amazing neurology that practically instantly detects that the surface that we're on is bouncier. And basically the body adjusts and says, oh, no, I don't need to use my legs like springs because the surface is springy. So I'm just going to use that. I'm just going to let that give me the spring. It's a very, very neat system. And I think that that might be why the barefoot strategy succeeded. It's plausible that barefoot walking on pavement, sidewalks, sides of roads, even trails, would not have been effective and maybe even risky. I would really love to see exactly this test, but done without treadmills. Still, it's not like barefoot walking is going to be a disaster or anything. I won't recommend it yet based on this evidence alone, but I will certainly start telling readers that barefoot walking might be useful. And it's not foolish to consider trying it. I certainly will upgrade it from seems like a bad idea to maybe worth trying, especially on a treadmill. Okay, that's it for the first big post of 2024, the first audio version, the first members only post, and there will be more soon. Now that the new server seems to be up and running, fingers crossed, knock on wood, I should just get into a nice steady rhythm with the newsletter. Got lots of writing planned, so stay tuned for more soon. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next time.